You and I were telling you to eat vegetables as a sin.
Yes.
Is it?
What, to eat vegetables is a sin?
I tell you, I said eating is a sin. That I'm going further more than that. Why? Just have the patience with it.
What is sin?
I tell you. Sin which stands in the way to have a realization of God, that is a sin. They are least sin and they are grosser sins. For instance, you kill a man, you're hanged. You kill an animal, you're simply fined because there nobody is going to be hanged for that. You kill birds and insects, nobody cares for you. So why you find in the elements, in the lowest vegetable there is one element, fully dwelt, four are latent. In insects there are two elements dwelt and the others are latent. In birds there are three elements fully dwelt and two are latent. In animals there are four elements fully dwelt and one is latent. In man is all elements are fully dwelt. So it is comparative, you see. What the Master say? Live on the least thing, vegetables, you see, or grains, and become conscious co-worker of the divine plan. Only then you can be absorbed, you see. This is what we want. The other thing you were just telling, what is that?
Yes, must you become a celibate?
Yes.
You must abstain.
I tell you. I tell you. Well, it is said, life of continence is required. We must have continence, life of continence. That's the control over all senses.
Whether you're married or not.
Yes, both.
Both. I mean, if you're married, then you must abstain.
I'm going for the happy patience here. I'm going for the, you're right. Well, look here. Those who are not married, they should be strictly celibate. One thing. Those who are married, what they should do? They should live up to what the scriptures say. What scriptures say? They say, married life is no bar to spirituality if conducted according to the scriptures. And what do the scriptures say about marriage? They say marriage is not a contract but a sacrament. See? It is God who unites. Let God disunite. It is taking a companion in life. You see? In wheel or row on this earthly sojourn to help each other to know God, that's the highest thing before a man. One duty is of begetting children, maybe. Not 100% duty, you see? And they went so far, Christ said, husbands should love their wives as Christ loved the church. So this is one part of the show, not everything, you see. But if you've given up to sensuous enjoyment daily, this and that, that is not healthy question. So, normal life, life of continence, as described by the scriptures, is very much required. Because, you see, this power is very much, you see, power that is basic of your physical body, your brain, your heart, everything, prolongs life, those who are celibate. But this is a very valuable thing, you see. It is how it is made. They say, from child, what you eat becomes child. From child is, you lose what is called blood. 40 drops of butter gives you 1 drop of blood. This is something, calculation they have made. And 40 drops of blood gives you fat. From fat comes the bones, muscles and bones. And from bones further it dwells into the pit in the bones, you see. And from that this is the lost reserve which comes up. It's a very valuable thing, you see. We must keep you feel very bad, you see. The more you keep it, the more you are given up, the following day you feel very not happy, you see. Your spirits are down. So that way of married life is no bar to spirituality. This he has given in scripture, all scriptures say. Maybe one or two masters who were not married, the majority of them were married, but they are not like as we are given up to all outward enjoyments. That's one part of the show. That's all.
But did not Jesus say that the true marriage is made in heaven?
Of the soul.
If of such a thing as soulmates.
And they were?
Soulmates.
Soulmates.
Soulmates,
yes. Yes, that's right. We should, that is the ideal goal, that there be two bodies and one soul. That's it. True ideal of a marriage. There's not one dragging that way, the other dragging that way, and there is divorce courts there and this are open. Not that. Master says so, you see.
Yes, wouldn't that be the mystical marriage, or the groom taking all?
Look here. Look.
The groom, the one...
Well, look here. This is physical contest brought about by reactions of what we have shown ourselves. Some are children, some are wives, some are husbands. These are reactions of the past. Why not everybody like that? So that would pay off very gladly what we have done, you see. And about the soul, soul has to unite with God. That's the mystical life. Marriage. That's how the soul body is again here. Yes, please.
Master, what happens when he gets initiation just before death?
Yes.
At that time, to work off the necessary karma, does that soul have to come back as another reincarnation or remain on the actual plane?
I tell you. Well, you see, that depends on the initiate. If when initiate is, he has got full faith in the master, he has resigned everything to him. This is such like case we do see, rare of course. You have faith on that, in that case, you see, or his faith is become so strong that that nullifies our reactions here, and master does not return with his physical body. If he has done something as a faith in the master, he is not returned. If he has done nothing, he has taken and not. Even then, the soul is cared for, but that cannot go below the man body, because in man body only that seed can grow. This is the concession. If man has done less, not fully, and his desires have been satisfied, if only desires remain one or two like that, those are also satisfied before leaving. They are placed in the higher planes according to their capacity, and they proceed from further on, not to return. So this is, those who have been initiated at least beyond the capacity of coming to body again, man body, not go below. Those have done something as got faith in the master, love for the master, other things are satisfied even before that, in one way or the other. And such souls are placed in the planes to which they are fit. But for that, that is why they enjoy, and we must develop in man body as much as we can. Because in man body we can do things in months, but we can do in years later on. The sooner we do, the better. So initiation is a blessing, because soul is cared for, you see. Those who have done advanced fully, they go straight up to the first plane, fifth plane, and third plane, as they advance. This is about those who have not done anything and done little for them. Yes, sir.
There is no one, I mean, I know that seems as you were just talking about, then there is no one of us without karma. We always have karma.
Generally, surely.
Always.
Yes.
There is no one that is, say, karma, without karma.
Every day we think that is a karma.
Yes.
The very thought is a karma.
Thought is a karma.
Yes, as I told you.
Yes,
sir.
The master.
The block is the five physical senses.
Big one, yes.
The block is the five physical senses.
Yes.
And when you recognize that you don't belong to the Lord of the world anymore and you rise, you try to develop to the other senses.
Mm.
However, master, this recreation of the spirit makes us completely anew, and are we then heir to karma, even then?
When you are put on the way, you come in contact with the God into expression power, with the light and sound. The more you come in contact with that, the more you become desireless, selfless. That is as you escape reactions.
But then, in our meditation, in bringing in the audible life current,
yes,
the music of the sphere,
yes,
the greatest thing in the world,
yes,
is not all music, vibration, music and color, it's all one light.
Surely.
Are we not light? Are we not in the position of feeling?
The whole world is vibration. See? When there are more vibration, first they say God made world and there were light. And from light proceeds the sound. There are also vibrations. We are in light, but our light is invalid by, as I told you. It is. There then you'll find that light and sound principle that is reverberating throughout all creation without closing your ears and without closing your eyes.
Then you are one with him, and this is why it's called the revelation path, is it not?
Revelations commence when you rise above body consciousness, and they grow more and more as you progress. You see, be still, physically and intellectually, and know that you are God.
But then the responsibility of living it, of taking dominion,
yes,
of acting God, not being, just becoming God, but acting it.
First we have to be the lover of God. Love, you see, is one that unites soul, blends the, what is a mystical marriage, becomes one later, ultimately. Yes, please.
Is there a possibility for any person while living on this earth,
yes,
to become a master?
Yes, I tell you. Last time when I came to the United States, the two children were put on the way. You see, they're small, 6, 7 years old. I asked them what you want. They said, we want to become masters. Right? I told them, you have been put on the way, you develop further, you may be selected as a master. It is God who selects masters, not the votes of the public. When he sees fit anybody, and some come as fit already. One principle is transferred from one college to another. Some are dwell in their own college, and they dwell there, made professors and their principal. So there is possibility. Each man is in the make. Each man has his own background. Some are more ready, others are less. It sometimes happens too. Man is in bed. He has dwelt already sufficiently. Well, he can be selected as a master. Nothing against. Every saint has his past and every sinner a future.
So many are called and few are chosen.
Yes, those who have given initiation. Many hear these things but have no desire for that. Out of this, in any town, there are millions of people living, but how many come up for this thing? Very few. Because of God, it's God's grace only that works.
Finally, how can we know we're ready to take that trip to Nirvana?
Beg what? No, no,
Nirvana.
No, no, I see. Wait.
When will we know we're right enough that we have...
Oh, that's all right. This question was put up.
I tell you.
I reply to your question, please. Last time, I was just called before a television, you see, invited there. Some people, some heads of other religions, because there were reputation like that everywhere, they wanted to just fail me in the presence of all those who hear the television. They called me, I never knew about that. There was one in charge of it, I mean, chief editor of a paper. The other was a bishop. The third was a Jew head. Fourth was an IMS TVT. And fifth was one more. So 4 or 5 heads of different religions were there. When I did that, they were standing, you know, what's wrong? All right, we have come to see you. All right, thank you. The Would you mind if we ask any questions? Most welcome. Well, tell me you are going out. We sat around the table. All right, tell me please. They put questions. Well, all right, you put your question, whatever you had. They put questions. And then I replied. Then further I told you if anything further, they put a further question, they were also replied. Later on, there were a round table conference, you see. Underneath one was just asking that you put some questions, they were just racking their head to put more questions. But anyhow, last of all, it lasted about 1 hour, this whole thing, this meeting. Last of all, the bishop asked me, how do we know that we are the alive God, the very question you said. He said, and I told him, if you've got pain in your stomach, how do you know that you've got pain in your stomach? There's nothing outside to show you. Each man his own witness, testimony. You are understand, you see God everywhere, there is no place where God is not. Everybody is within you and you are in everybody. All froth and foam is over the sea and there is still water underneath. You dip in there. These are some examples to show. But how do we know that we know ourselves when we get pain in the stomach? They kept quiet and they said, thank you, you are right. And that television went out everywhere. That went to make more name before the people. So this man knows himself best, you see. Others cannot get properly.
Master, when I say to my family, yes. Would we please the sacrifice? They yes. Say yes. We love you, we'll listen.
Right.
And every time they have another excuse, which really is a good excuse. Is it my fault or is it because the Master isn't calling them to come?
Well, they're not ready yet. Mm-hmm. There's no hunger.
Mm-hmm.
You see, there's food for the hungry. Water for the thirsty. They'll never come up unless God's grace. It's God's grace. By God's grace alone, man can come on the way, not others. So they are not ready yet, that's all. By inducement, love them. That's not your fault. Rest assured. Yes, please.
I have a question, sir.
Yes, please.
Judging by the outcome of this meeting and what people have been talking about, it seems to me that most people are more concerned about sins, their personal sins.
Yes.
Or crimes against God and fellow man. Now some people are older than others here. They have sowed more wild oats than others. They have sowed more wild oats than others. I ask you this question. They
Yes.
Most people here are concerned about the burden of sin.
What is sin?
Or karma, what you call
sin. Karma, I will explain. What is sin, what do you mean to say?
Yes.
Oh,
the question I want to ask, sir, reverently, is does God grant any dispensation of grace to those of us who have been guilty of gross crimes?
Yeah.
Such as myself, I have killed hundreds of men.
Yeah.
Now, according to the laws of God, the Lord says, thou shalt not kill.
Yeah.
Men are put in a position and forced to kill. Is there any dispensation of grace that God extends to people who have sinned and they have become aware of their sin? And they are sorry for their sins, and they're trying to find God's favor in forgiving this sin. Now, is there any way that a man can be assured that his karma has been wiped out?
Yes, I wish it was. There is now judgment and there is now grace. Both are there. If a lamp is burning, you see, always there's darkness underneath. If a bulb is burning, there's darkness above. both are the laws of nature. They are law of judgment and they are law of grace. So law of judgment is what you say, nail for a nail and tooth for a tooth. Then nobody escapes. The law of grace which is dwelt by, how I tell you, when you become conscious, beloved of God, the God in man is, because it is God alone who can give that contact with Him. He comes across by some person at whose home God is manifest. He follows Him, repents for His past actions. He takes Him under His arms. Don't you remember the case of Christ when one lady came up, lady of the woman of the town? He went on the earth, you see. He washed his feet with the hair, cleansed with the hair. And the Simon over there, he thought, who had stained such like master up there, he was some twitch as he became. Why has he got any cognizance with this lady here, with the woman of the town? Then Christ, because they read the heart of others, he said, well, Simon, look here, and yet, do you know if a man or somebody 50 talents, the other 500, and the man who had to take him for this boat, to whom he had done more favor? And he thought, perhaps, he is a very overactive master. He wants to conceive his sin. Because each man thinks from his own level, you see. He said, yes, those of whom we have forgiven 500. Then he said, look here, I came to your house. You did not welcome me. You did not wash my feet. You did not offer me anything. He has come wet with a tear, say, wash my feet, this and that. He says, well, I forgive thee for thou lost much. The law of grace too, you see. Because if you repent, fall down at the feet of God in man. It is God, you see. Well, if God can create world, in that case, your reactions are nullified. You see? If, as I told you just now, who is there to forgive sins? Only God. God can forgive sins. Is it not? God can. But the point is, in whatever plane we are working, we have to abide by those laws. When we rise above and become conscious co-worker of the divine plan, all reactions, as I told you, the karmas are bound up to this law of grace too, if we are meet. Both are laws. Laws of judgment are for, then no, you see, I tell you, sow a seed, then hen before and an egg. Is there any way out? No? There is seed before and a tree. So there's no way out, you see. When you become rise above these levels of thinking, you see, physical as to color, you see, become conscious co-worker of the divine plan, well, all seeds are burnt away and cannot grow. That's how it stands. If a father, suppose your son is there, he has fought with somebody, would you like to send him to the police? You slap him once to your own self, but you won't let him go to the police. In turn, you see, there's something like that. So love is the greatest law. Love knows what? Keep my commandments. So they don't interfere generally like that, but those who are just surrender everything to Him, that's it. As I told you, both have the law of judgment is there and law of grace is there too.
But for the master to take away 4/5 of your karma, then you become initiated, and then you're off the wheel.
I tell you how the taste of the karma, you see.
Yeah.
Law of sympathy is there. That's another thing. But at the time of initiation, what the master does, as I explained to you before, future lay down a certain line of conduct. Present reactions, what they are improved, they don't touch it. They give back life to the soul. They become strong. Pinching effect is gone. And when they give a contact with him, the light, the sound, etc., they become conscious kuvarkara, pity mind friend. All previous karmas are bundled. This is all. His greatness lies in the fact we cannot rise above body consciousness. With little thought of his, you see, he raises his soul maybe 10, 20, 100 sometimes. All rise up and sit, give contact with God. That soul which is bent down, you see, under the burden of karma, that is raised. I think that costs him nothing. See, for motion, thousands of animals are, others drink water, will it be? I mean, diminished, no? So he's carrying the souls, that is carrying the souls of God, the God in him. Out of sympathy, love, sympathy is there, then you contact. But if that power is not there, how can you see the light of God?
Master, with patients die under a surgeon's knife, and as the surgeon gets older and more experienced, he looks back and finds that he made mistakes. Now, because he's got to get practice and learn, and he tries his best, but now what is the...
No, don't.
Have those doctors made their karma for themselves, or is this the...
I don't know. As I told you, even breathing is an accident to you. He has learned to see this anatomy, which you were to mean if I understood correctly.
Yes.
They apply anatomy on dead bodies. You see? When the soul is gone. On that to learn how to analyze, how to anatomy by surgery, etc. First of all, they apply on dead bodies. In the hospital, you find like that.
Mm-hmm.
And further, sometimes they have to kill little insects, some frogs and this and that thing. That is a sin. But that sin is being committed to save higher lives. You see? Higher lives are met. So that is sin, but there is no absolving, you see, unless you become conscious to work around the divine plan, as I told you. So that is for something higher, you have to do something lower. That goes, but for no selfish motive, but just to help other humanity to be fit physically. So that man body, which is considered to be the highest in all creation, you see, that should be maintained and he should know how to know God from that point.
Thank you.
Yes, sir?
Prayer have any effect on karma?
Surely. Prayer, which is, which comes out of the heart, not set forms of prayer, I tell you. You are simply reverberated, you see, by lips, has no connection with the heart. The prayer which comes out of the heart, you see, heart becomes full of love and tears roll down from the eyes. That's the sign. Such like prayer in heart. That nullifies, reacts, counteracts. But how strong it is, that you find. Everybody prayer is not heard because it does not go out from the heart. Simply professional sake, like only, oh God, lips have to do nothing. Heart has nothing to do with it. Then such like prayer does not help. The prayer has to vary wonderfully. With all human efforts fail, there the prayer succeeds. But that prayer before should be before a competent person, in whose competency you have got faith. It is from a weaker man praying before a strong man. You see? So if you perhaps you read in Bible, it is comes there, Christ said somewhere, well, look here, if you pray God, He may give you or not give you. If you pray God in My name, He may give you. But if you pray to Me, you will surely have it. What is the difference between these three statements, you see? Because if you pray to God, we are not fully settled, there is a God. You simply say something which no motive or no ideal before you. You say to pray God in My name, that is also not very strong faith. We are depending to something else. But if you see the God in Him, that must be good to you. That is good. Well, what is your problem? Yes?
What can I do to
get away from, you know, all that bad thinking, whatever. Change things to concentrate.
You think there's a way when you come to a master, he gives way for that. Two ways. One, by self-introspection, keep a diary. The other, he gives a contact within. You see? Both things together help to make a man, even a robber to be saved. Tell hope. And they told you every saint has his past and every sinner's future.
Hello, and welcome to the Satsang for Master Kirpal Singh. The recording you just heard was the last half of a talk which Master gave on January the 1st, 1964, and it was called Initiation is Like a Lesson. Our reader this evening is Rick Casey. Go ahead, Rick.
Thank you, David. I'm going to continue reading tonight from the book Godman from the Ruhani Satsang website, the HTML version. And I'll start at chapter 13, which I had read into just a little bit last time, but I'll just start at the beginning. Chapter 13, Master and the Homecoming of Jivas. Master comes from his spiritual abode to call the Jivas back home. No man can come to me except the Father which hath sent me draw him. John 6:44. Our spirit is exactly of the same essence as God's. Having been separated from that ocean of bliss, it has become imprisoned in the prison house of body and mind. Saints also come down from their spiritual abode to take back home such spirits as are prepared for the return journey. It is, in fact, God Himself who comes in the garb of man to lead the jivas out of the tentacles of the negative powers after they have served the period of probation. This is the fulfillment of the grand covenant, or the great law. Man is to be the teacher of man, teaching the true redemption and homegoing with rejoicing. When the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, they that hear shall live. John 5:25. He who sent thee into the world calls thee back. Return ye to thy native home in Sahaj, beyond the threefold regions, physical, mental, and causal. One with God, they come into this world under His behest as His plenipotentiaries to administer His law concerned with homegoing. This is their noble mission, and gracefully they fulfill His purpose. Shamas e Tabriz tells us about himself. Little can you imagine what types of birds we are, and what we keep warbling all the time. We may look to be a beggar, but our actions are more than kingly. We may appear to be poor, but we are richer than the richest mine. When we are king of kings, we care not for the brief stay in this prison house of the world. We are just a pilgrim here and cannot remain for long. We hold a covenant with the Lord and stand true to our troth. So long as we are in physical raiment, we do not get annoyed with anybody, nor do we vex another. Like a veritable paradise, we are ever filled with kindly light and heavenly grace. Happily do we live, with a cheery heart and a smile on our lips. Guru Gobind Singh likewise tells us of himself. Casting off the duality, I had become one with the Lord. Never did I like to come down again into the world, but it was at His bidding that I had to yield, and I came to fulfill His purpose. Kabir Sahib also says, Kabir comes from the celestial abode of the Lord and holds a direct commission, instrument of instruction, from him. Again, in the gospel we have, I do nothing of myself, but as my Father hath taught me, I speak these things. John 8:28. In Gurbani, we also come across similar references. O Lalo, I speak nothing from myself. I simply utter what the Beloved puts into my mouth. Poor Nanak opens his mouth only when he is bidden to do so. Chapter 14. Master and His Mission. Master souls come into the world out of sheer compassion for suffering humanity. Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Matthew 11:28. They have a necessity to put on the physical raiment full of impurity as it is, because they have to work on the physical plane among human beings. God clothed himself in vile man's flesh so that he might be weak enough to suffer woe. John Donne. The way in which they come into and go out of the world is, however, quite different from ours. They come and go of their own free will, while we do so under the irresistible force of karmic pressure, just as a prisoner would enter a prison under a sentence of penal servitude. They come for the benefit of mankind, to grant the life impulse to such embodied souls as yearn for life. Disembodied and internally free, they come as saviors of souls. They that are whole have no need of the physician, but they that are sick. I came not to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. Mark 2:17. Birth and death affect them not, for they come as saviors for the sinners. By transmitting their own life energy, they transform the disciples into saints. A master soul is the greatest benefactor on earth. His work is of the highest order. He comes to liberate the souls from the vast prison house of mind and matter, so that he may take the exiles back to their glorious home and restore them to their rich heritage. A kingly soul may direct the prison warden to provide delicious food for the prisoners under his charge. Another may grant the boon of delicacies to them. A third may order for them good clothing and lodging, and so on. Each of them, no doubt, may do something to ameliorate their lot for the time being. But if someone were to throw open the prison gate and ask them to escape the squalor and misery of the jail, his work would naturally be counted as one far excelling the works of others. This is exactly the nature of the work of a master soul. He reveals to us the lost kingdom and restores us to paradise, from which Adam and through him his progeny were driven out for the original disobedience to God's commandment. Man had an ignoble fall from the Garden of Eden, and none could restore him to the good grace of the Father and bring about the reconciliation except the Son of Man. He takes upon himself the vicarious responsibility for the sins of man, purifies him of all ignominy, and by transformation of his own life impulse, makes him arise into cosmic awareness and gain everlasting life. He that believeth on the Son hath everlasting life. John 3:36. Chapter 15. Master and His Word. Master is like a wish-yielding tree. He always grants the wishes, whatever they are, of the seekers, the rich and the poor, the high and the low. Everyone comes to him for something. His greatest pleasure, however, lies in liberating saints from the clutches of body and mind. Irrespective of his denominational character, he attends to the spiritual needs of all. He neither creates new isms, nor does he denounce the isms in existence. He comes not to break the law, but to fulfill the law. All isms, spiritual, in fact, receive strength and solidarity from him. In his inimitable loving way, he takes everyone from the line of least resistance. He does not interfere with the creeds and beliefs of a person, whatever these are, nor does he meddle with the social order of things. He simply talks of the spirit, its intrinsic nature, its seat in the body, its various operative processes, its latent capabilities, and how it can be developed in its relation with body, mind, and with God, and how it can be liberated, made self-poised, and turned Godward. His appeal is directly to spirit, and his words sink deep into the very depths of the soul. He deals with ready cash at the counter and does not make people live in hope till the end of their lives or thereafter. He teaches, believe not the words of a master soul unless you see the things he tells about with your own eyes. It is just for the sake of experiment that we have in the first instance to accept the words of a master. But when we find the truth of what he says by actual experimentation, then the hypothesis is turned into conviction. When a person once sees the light of the sun, he cannot deny the existence of the sun, even though the bats of the world may unite in denying the solar phenomenon. Unless the inner vision is approached, the truth of reality does not dawn, and the jivas, or embodied spirits, remain groping in utter darkness, in ignorance of the highest and the greatest magnitude. Whenever a master of truth comes into the world, the spiritually hungry and thirsty gather around him and quench their hunger and thirst by the manna and the elixir of life that he freely gives to the aspirants. Gradually, their love develops into a steady devotion that benefits them more and more for the saving grace of the Master and helps a jiva to travel quickly home. Chapter 16. Master and His Duties. Countless are the duties and responsibilities of a master. His first and foremost work is to link, once again, the created with the Creator, to win for him the kingdom of God and restore him to his ancient and forgotten lineage and heritage. This he does by means of shabd, or word, which carries the spirit to its native home. Like electromagnetic waves, the shabd, or word, is vibrating everywhere, but unfortunately, to the overpowering density and weight of matter on the physical plane, we are unable to feel it or harness it to our benefit. A master, by his personal guidance, frees the spirit from the dead weight of matter, disengages it from the sensory organs, withdraws its ever-spreading rays, and collects them at its center, between the two eyebrows, thereby enabling it to experience a little of the light of God and to hear Shabd, the voice of God, both of which, by continuing practice, can be developed in course of time. The jiva then finds himself attracted by that magnetic power, the sound principle, which carries him step by step to his ultimate goal. A mere knowledge of the science of the masters cannot be of any avail. Intellectualism by itself, however keen, cannot be of any aid. An ethical life is a stepping stone to spirituality. Cleanliness is said to be next to godliness. A master, therefore, begins his work with man-making. Cleanliness in thought, word, and deed is an essential which cannot be overemphasized. If self-knowledge precedes God-knowledge, a master has first to impart in theory and practice the knowledge of the spirit to liberate it from the shackles of mind and body. Gradually, the spirit is enabled to cast off the various coverings or sheaths with which it is enshrouded until it becomes spirit, untrammeled and unalloyed, and exultantly cries out, "I am spirit." After this comes training in God knowledge, which is the climax and the crest jewel in the science of spirituality, and enables the spirit to attain Godhead. Once the shepherd takes charge of a lost sheep and brings it into his fold, he takes over the entire responsibility. Once a master, always a master, is a well-known dictum. Master on earth, he is master in the various regions, subtle, causal, and beyond. He does not rest until a spirit is safely escorted back to the Father's mansion in heaven. The process of homegoing and progress on the path is entirely at his discretion, and he is the sole judge for the time and measure of each step Godward. From the time the spirit crosses over to the astral plane and comes face to face with the self-luminous form of the master, the jiva has nothing more to do and strive for. It is the master's job henceforth. Apart from this, a master is a child of light, and like a lighthouse over tempestuous seas, sheds his kindly light throughout the world. Like the good shepherd, he has to look after and tend many sheep. Whoever has anything to do with a master's soul is ultimately to be prepared for the path and helped through in his probation and apprenticeship. Chapter 17. Guru is God-man. Master is in truth the perfect manifestation of God. Filled with godly light, he is the torchbearer of God. He is the pole from which God works out his plan of redemption. God, having made man after his own image, placed an iron wall between himself and the Spirit, owing to the first sin of disobedience to him. Man was thus driven out from the Garden of Eden and placed in the physical world, so the story goes, to earn his bread with the sweat of his brow and to work out his salvation through a Savior, the Son of Man, in which garb God himself comes with the key to unlock the kingdom of heaven for leading in the lost sheep. The Word becomes flesh and dwells among us. God's light shines through his eyes. God's voice speaks through him, and God's grace works out salvation for those who hunger and thirst for him. Like a common man, he lives among us, shares our joys and sorrows, gives us instructions in spirituality, and guides us on the path. Embedded in the Father, he works out his will. All things are delivered unto me of my Father, and no man knoweth the Son but the Father. Neither knoweth any man the Father, save the Son, and he to whomsoever the Son will reveal him. Matthew 11:27. Maulana Rumi also says, in the Master is lodged both God and the Mediator. There is, in fact, not the least distinction between the two. Drive all thought of duality from thy mind, or else thou shalt get lost in the wilderness, and so also shall be the fate of thy first lessons in spirituality. He who considers the two as separate entities has not yet learnt anything from or known anything of the Master. Master is the form of the formless God, the form that we can see and have relationship with. It is this very form that imparts to us the knowledge of God. And again, it is this very form, luminous, of course, which accompanies us on the journey Godward and directs our footsteps on the path. In each plane, physical, causal, and beyond, there is increased splendor of the Master, and his limitless sway and power becomes more manifest to the companion spirit as it travels along. God-man as he is, in the world his form is the Qibla and Kaaba of the Muslims, the altar of the Christians, the eternal light of the Zoroastrians, the temple, the synagogue, and the Gurdwara, for he alone is fit to be worshipped. Like electricity in the atmosphere, the universe is charged through and through with God. There is no place where he is not, and yet he is hidden from view. The Guru, or Master, is the mighty switch, the source and fountainhead that makes it possible for us to witness his greatness and get glimpses of his power. Short, Master is the pole at which God actually works, and therefore he may fittingly be called polarized God, as distinguished from the latent state in which he is at one with everything, and yet we know him not. The greatness and the puissance of God is manifested in the Master in abundance. So long as a person does not come in contact with some God-man, God just remains an idea with him, a mere figment in his everyday mind, a shadow with no real substance at all. In the God-man, one finds a living God on earth, just as anyone talking and smiling with us, guiding us by word and example, helping us through from stage to stage. Blessed indeed is a spirit that can establish a living contact with a living master. The greatest gift of God to mankind. Man indeed is the teacher of man. Unless a God-man gives us light, we cannot have the light of reality, and like blind men, we grope in utter darkness. In the physical world, we, with physical eyes, can see nothing but physicality around us. The subtle vision can see the subtle world, and the causal can view the causal universe. Master of all three, and even beyond, he bestows inner light that illumines the inner darkness, and one begins to witness an endless panorama of spiritual vistas, ever expanding and bringing to view new delights at every step. All this work he does by means of the sound current or the voice of God, hearing which the dead are quickened with life and attain life everlasting. He is the connecting link between a soul and the oversoul, with roots embedded in God and branches spreading throughout the world, laden with flowers and fruits of paradise. He provides spiritual food to all who come to him. Maulana Rumi, in this context, says, O friend, sit near one who knows the condition of thy heart, and who can make it whole. Rest a while under the shade of a tree that is laden with fresh and fragrant flowers. Loiter not in the marketplace from shop to shop, as idlers do. Go straight to one who has a store of honey with him. Take hold of the garment, O brave soul, of one who knows well the various planes, physical, mental, supramental, and beyond, and is able to remain with thee like a true friend, whether in life or in death, in this world or in the next. The form, physical or astral, of the master or God in man, which helps us through in our journey Godward, is better by far than the native invisible form of God, which is beyond all thought and contemplation. Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, Ishwar, Niranjar, and Parameshwar, incarnations of Brahma, are all worthy of our respect and adoration. We have read much about them, religiously, in sacred lore. They figure as heroes and heroines in mythological tales, but as such are nothing but figments of human imagination. When Satguru, or the Master of Truth, takes charge of his spirit at Gagan, he gradually reveals the true significance in way of each of them. All of them have existed since creation and are engaged in carrying on the duties assigned to each of them. Well, I have come to the end of my time. I was reading from Godman from the Ruhani Satsang website, chapters 13 through 17. Thank you for everything, Master.
And thank you, Rick, for reading for us. There were 51 people at this evening's satsang. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And thank you, Master, for providing this for us.
Christ said, I have come to make people see who do not see. Take heed that the light which is within you is not darkness. We are all children of light, enveloped by so many sheets. If you know how to take off these sheets, you see the light is already there.